More than once that night, Araminta swooned from a combination of exhaustion and aerosol-fueled ecstasy. Each time he allowed her a small rest before rousing her again. Those were the occasions when she dreamed her strange dream. She did not wake up until mid-morning. When she did, the details of the night had merged together into a single strand of relentless animal behavior. She had surprised herself by yielding to everything he had demanded from her. The dinner date, Bovey, was lying on the bed beside her. He was the only one left in the bedroom. "Good morning," he said with soft politeness. "Yeah," Araminta said. She still felt hopelessly tired as well as unpleasantly sore. The aerosol had worn off, leaving her skin cool and slightly clammy. "You look beautiful when you're sleeping. Did you know that?"
No one has told me that before.
How do you feel?"
Okay, I suppose."
"All right," he said in an understanding tone, and stroked some disheveled hair from her face. "Let me put it this way. Would you like another night like that?"
"Yes,"
she whispered, and knew she was blushing. Despite the frequent outrages he had committed, it had been absolutely the best sex she'd ever had, exactly the kind of multiple-partner athleticism Cressida always boasted about, and she had been too timid to try. But last night it technically had been only one man. This way she got the thrill without the emotional guilt. Almost. "I hoped you would. Not every single can cope with me like that. You're very special, Araminta." She hesitated, unsure how much to confide. "That is stupid.
It was like I was becoming part of you. Is that silly?"
"No. With an experience that acute, there's always a merger through the Gaia field with anyone nearby, though you mostly remained closed to me. Was that by choice?"
"I don't have Gaia motes."
He gave her a curious look.
"Interesting. I was sure..."
"Nah. Skip it. The house is running a bath for you."
"Thank you.
So, where do we go from here?" "There's a play on at the Broadway Empire, some kind of comedy, with real actors. I've booked for tonight." That was not quite what she wanted qualifying.
"Lovely. And after?"
"I would like you to come back here. Back to this bed. I'd really like that." Araminta nodded demurely.
"I will."
She did not think it could ever be as exciting as last night had been. First times were always special. But if he's were just as randy tonight, it would still be the hottest sex in town. She eased herself off the bed, drawing a sharp breath as she straightened up.
How many bodies have you got?"
It was his turn to seem reticent. "Over 30.
"How many last night?"
6, he said with a very male grin of satisfaction.
"Ozzy, that's it. I'm now officially a complete trollop. Can't wait to see Cressida's face when I tell her that. 6.
She'll be as jealous as hell." "What do you want for breakfast?" he asked, as she opened the door to the ensuite bathroom. "Orange juice, bath semi-coffee, strong, croissants with strawberry and hijun jam. It'll be ready when you are." The regrav capsule sped low over the scrub desert. Dead and desiccated bushes, virtually the same color as the crumbling, jaundiced mud from which they had grown, merged to a speckle blur as Aaron looked down through the transparent fuselage. Their jumbled smear confused his visual perspective, making it difficult to tell if their altitude was 1 meter or 1,000. He often found himself searching for the capsule's jet-black shadow, slithering fast across the low undulations to provide a clue. A couple of minutes before they reached the ranch, he saw a fence. Posts of bleached wood were sticking up in a section of desert that appeared no different from the rest of the wretched expanse. Rusty spike wire sagged between them. More fences flashed past underneath as they drew closer. The fields they marked out were smaller, closer together. Eventually, the clutter of buildings that comprised the ranch itself was visible, nestling at the center of a vast web of spike wire.
"What does he raise out here?"
Corilin asked.
"Cormews," Aaron said.
"I can't see anything moving.
Wrong season, I think."
She gave the vast desert a disapproving look.
There are seasons out here?
Oh, yes. It rains every 10 years.
Gosh, how do the ranchers stand the excitement?
The capsule began to circle the ranch. He counted 8 large outlying barn sheds, all built from an ancient ginger-coloured composite. The house in the middle was a white stone structure surrounded by a big emerald garden. An outdoor swimming pool shimmered deep turquoise. Terrestrial horses cantered around a broad paddock.
Okay, that actually looks rather nice,
Coriolan said grudgingly. His field functions reported that the capsule was being given a broad-spectrum scan.
Not quite paradise,
he muttered. His own passive scan was registering some dense power clumps in the ground. They were arranged in an even circle around the perimeter, a defense ring of some kind. The capsule settled on a designated zone just outside the garden.
Can you... he started to say to Coriolan, then saw her disinterested expression.
Just leave the talking to me, okay?
Of course I will. Shall I just stay in here? Or would you like to gag me? Perhaps you'd prefer me stuffed into a suspension pod.
Now there's true tempting, he told her cheerfully, ignoring the scowl.
Paul Alcoff was leaning on the 5-bar gate that led to the paddock, dressed entirely in faded blue denim with a Stetson perched on his head. He was a tall man who finally was allowing his 7.5 centuries to show. His hair was snow-white, worn long at the back, but perfectly brushed. His movements were noticeably slow, as if each limb were stiff. With skin that was tanned dark brown, his pale blue eyes seemed to shine out of his thin face. A neatly trimmed goatee added to his palpable air of distinction. Even Aaron recognized that he was in the presence of a formidable man. He immediately began to wonder just how much living had been crammed into those 750 years. A great deal, if he was any judge.
Sir, thank you for agreeing to see me.
Coriolan shot him a surprised look at the respectful tone. Paul gave a small smile, then lifted his Stetson an inch off his hair and inclined his head to Coriolan.
Ma'am, welcome.
Hello.
A thoroughly confused Coriolan managed.
Don't normally allow your kind in my home, Paul said directly to Aaron, so you'll understand if I don't ask you in and break bread with you. My bionics are for combat. I'm not higher.
Uh-huh.
Don't suppose it makes no difference these days, son. That battle was fought a long time ago.
Did you win?
Planet still human. So I guess we did some good back then.
So you are protectorate?
My old partners asked me to let you land. When I inquired, I heard they got leaned on by people high up in the movement. People we haven't heard from in a long time. You made that happen, son. So I'd appreciate it if you don't go all coy with me now.
Of course not.
What do you want?
Information.
Figured as much.
He turned and rested his elbows on the top of the gate. You see Georgia out there? She's the one with the dappled mane. Aaron and Coriolan walked over to the gate.
Yes, sir,
Aaron said. Frisky little thing, ain't you? I can trace her bloodline right back to Arabians on Earth. From the mid-19th century. She's as pure as they come. Not an artificial sequence in her whole genome. Conceived naturally and born from her mother's belly just as every one of her ancestors had been. To me, that is a thing of beauty. Sublime beauty. I do not wish to see that spoiled. No, indeed. I don't want to see her foals improved. She and her kind have the right to exist in this universe, just as she was intended to, by the planet that created her.
Aaron watched the horse as she cantered around, tossing her mane.
I can understand that.
Can you now? And my hat.
Sir?
Paul took his Stetson off and examined it before returning it to his head.
This is the real McCoy, I'll have you know. One of the very last to come out of Texas. Over 250 years ago, in a factory that manufactured them for damn near a millennium before ANA finally shut down what it regarded as an inconsequential irrelevance. The once humans who live on that poor old world these days don't even make them as a hobby anymore. I bought a whole batch and keep them in stasis, so every time I wear one out, I'll have a fresh one. I have only two left now. That's a crying shame. But then I don't expect to be around long enough to use that last one. It'll sit right there, on top of my coffin. I'm sorry to hear that, sir. So tell me, son, do you see what I am now?
Not quite, no.
Paul fixed Aaron with a perturbingly intense stare.
If I can get all hot under the collar about the purity of a hat, just think what I'm like when human heritage is threatened with extinction.
Ah,
yes. I'm protectorate and proud of it. I've played my part in preventing those obscene perversions from spreading their sanctimonious bullshit supremacy across these glorious stars. Higher isn't like some old-fashioned religion or ideology. With them, fellas who hold two different beliefs can argue and cuss about such notions all night long over a bottle of whiskey and laugh it off in the morning like gentlemen. But not higher culture. I regard it as a physical virus to be exterminated. It will contaminate us and take away choice. If you are born with bionics infecting your cells, your choice is taken away from you. You will download your thoughts into ANA. That's it. No option, no alternative. Your essence has been stolen from you before you are born. Humans, true humans, have free will. Hires do not. No, indeed.
And the life they live between birth and download?
Cordy Lynn asked.
Irrelevant. They're the same as pets, or more likely cattle. Cosseted and protected by machines until the moment they're ready to submit to their metal god in a final sacrifice.
So what's the point in that god creating them?
Ultimately, there won't be. Despite the years, this is early days yet. ANA believes it is our replacement. If it is allowed free reign, it will see us extinct.
A lot of species continue after their post-physical plateau, Aaron said. For most, a singularity is a regeneration event. Those that don't go post-physical diversify and spread across new stars.
Yes, but no longer what they were.
Paul gazed out at Georgia again.
Unless she is protected, the universe will never see her like again. That is wrong. It cannot be allowed.
The radical higher movement is almost extinct, Aaron said. There are no more infiltrations. ANA saw to that. Paul smiled thinly.
Yeah, and ain't that an irony?
Maybe the good Lord is having a joke on his metal pretender over morals.
I need to ask you about your time as an active protectorate member.
Go right ahead, son. I don't know what you are, but I'm pretty sure what you're not. And that's the police, or some version of them.
No, sir, I am not.
Glad to hear it.
I'm here about Inigo.
Ah, that was high up on my list. You two looking for him?
Did you know he was higher?
Paul's reaction startled Aaron. The old man slapped his hand on the gate and produced a beaming smile.
Son of a bitch! I knew it! I goddamn knew it! Hell, he was a wily one. Do you know how long we watched him?
So you suspected?
Of course we suspected.
That means Eric Horovy was higher.
Eric? Hell no, poor kid. He was used just like the sisters by that bastard angel.
Sisters? Are you talking about Inigo's aunt?
You don't know so much after all, do you, son?
No, sir. But I do need to learn. It is urgent.
Ha! Everything is urgent. Whole universe is in a hurry these days. I know it's that way because I'm older, but damn.
Eric, Aaron prompted gently.
We'll start with the angels. You know what they are?
I've heard of them.
The radical hires wanted to convert entire worlds to their culture. They didn't want to give people a choice about it. Like I said, if you're born with bionics, you don't have any options in life, in what you become. So back then, these angels would land on a planet and do their dirty work, starting the infection, which would spread across the entire population. Now, the Protectorate watched the spaceports for anyone with bionics and kept tabs on them while they were visiting. Still do, so I gather. So the angels would land out in the wild somewhere. They'd jump off ship while it was still in low orbit, and the force fields would protect them through aerobraking. He gave Aaron a long look. Could you do that?
Yes, I suppose so. It's just a question of formatting. But back then it would have been cutting edge.
Oh, the bastards were that, for sure. The force fields were what earned them their name. They were shaped like wings and brought them down to the world amid a fiery splendor. A lot of them got through unnoticed. This time, though, we got lucky. A sympathizer out fishing, saw the thermal trail it left over the ocean and called it in. Me and my team tracked the monster to Kumo, but we weren't quick enough. By the time we got there, it had hooked up with Eric Harvey and Imelda Vitek, who were dating just like normal kids. Now, the thing with angels is they're hermaphroditic, and they're beautiful. I mean, really beautiful. This one was exceptional even by their standards. Either a pretty boy or a real humdinger of a girl, depending on your own gender.
It was what you wanted it to be. So it made friends with Eric and Imelda and went to bed with both of them, Eric first. Now, that's important. Its organs injected his sperm with bionics.
Then it lay with Imelda and impregnated her with Eric's altered sperm.
Contraception? Aaron queried.
No use. Angels can neutralize it faster than any medic. So the kids find they're having a baby, and the DNA test proves it's theirs. No question. Bionics are hellishly difficult to detect in an embryo even today. Back then it was near impossible. So bang, you've got a changeling in the nest without ever knowing it. Bionics don't come active until puberty, so by then it's too late. Plant enough of them in a population, and a few generations later, most of the births are higher. But we intercepted this little love triangle in time.
The college art block. Cory Lynn said.
Yes, ma'am. You might say the angel put up something of a fight, but we got it. All you really need to defeat bionics is a heavier level of firepower. The art block got in the way.
What about the baby?
We took Eric and Imelda back to our field headquarters. She was pregnant, about 2 weeks gone, as I recall, and it was infected.
I thought you couldn't tell.
Paul looked straight ahead at the horizon. There are always ways you can find out. You have to test the cells directly.
Oh, Ozzie,
Cory Lynn breathed. Her face had paled. We took it out of her and checked. No embryo can survive that kind of test. Fortunately, we were right that time. It was one of them.
You're not human, no matter what you claim.
Aaron gave her a furious look. She started to say something, then threw her hands up in disgust and walked away.
Sorry about that, Aaron said. What happened?
Standard procedure in cases when the girl knows she's pregnant, which Imelda did. We can't wipe weeks from the memories. That would be detectable. So we took another ovum from her and fertilized it with Eric's contribution and implanted it. Then they both got a memory wipe for the evening they spent with us. Next morning, they wake up with a bad hangover and can't remember what they did. Typical teenage morning after.
Did it go wrong then?
No, son. Everything worked perfectly. 9 months later, they had a lovely little girl. A normal one.
So how was Inigo conceived?
Imelda had a sister.
Sabine?
Yes. They were twins. Identical twins.
Ah. I think this is starting to make sense.
I should have realized. It's every teenage boy's ultimate fantasy. Plenty of men, too.
He slept with both of them.
Yes. Him and the angel. You just confirmed that for me. Finally. Part of the Protectorate's whole cleanup procedure is to review the angel's memories, to find out who it has contaminated. Hacking into its brain is a terrible, terrible thing. One of the greatest abuses of medical technology possible. It takes days to break the protection which bionics provide for the neurons. I used to do it for the team. May God forgive me. But it was necessary. There's no other way of discovering what those devil-spawned monsters have been up to. It's not an exact science now or then. Minds are not tied to little repositories like a memory cube. I had to merge my mind with its and endure its vile, slippery thoughts inside my own skull. When I reviewed its recent memories, I actually experienced coupling with Imelda. He closed his eyes, clearly pained by the fraudulent memory. Her face was inches from me. She tasted so sweet. But now I don't suppose it was all her. Rather, the memories weren't just of her. I couldn't tell the difference between the girls. Damn it, at the time I didn't know there was a difference I should be searching for. So Inigo was born as part of a radical higher infiltration plan. Yes. We were shocked when we found out Sabine was pregnant. But that was just before she was due. There were a lot of arguments within my team about what we should do. Snatch the baby and test it. That was one option, the mild one. Paul looked over at Corilin, who was sitting on a low concrete wall outside one of the barns. But intervention becomes progressively difficult as time winds away, especially once the child is born. We're not... There's a difference between abortion and infanticide, to me, anyway. And once it was born, it had a legal right of residency. Even if we took it away from the mother and shipped it back to the Central Worlds, they'd just send it right back. Legally, it's a mess, which is why the Protectorate was formed, to stop the whole nightmare scenario before it gets politically complicated. So what did you do? I never really believed the girls. Having a kid 2 weeks apart was coincidence. In the event, we settled for observation. If Inigo was infected, he'd give himself away eventually. They all do. But he didn't. Nope. We monitored him off and on for over 25 years. He never put a foot wrong. He was a straight-down-the-line normal human. School, university, girlfriends. Not exceptionally sporting. Got injured when he played football. Had to get a job. Kept out of local politics. Signed up with a rejuve finance company. When he took aerosols, he got high. Took a boring academic position in the State University Cosmology Department. There was nothing to indicate he had bionics. Right up until you arrived today, I'd still have said he most probably didn't. I had come to accept that his birth maybe was coincidence after all. Believe me, son, if we'd confirmed it when he reached legal age, we would have made a quiet ultimatum. Leave or die. Yes, there's no other way you can treat them. Then he did leave, didn't he? All the way to Centurion Station. Yes, and what a goddamn pitiful mess that's turned into. Half the aliens in the galaxy want to shoot us out of space. Who can blame them? It's only the Ocasan Empire. You mean they're the only ones who have declared themselves? Don't tell me you think the others are just going to sit back and let us wreck the very stars themselves. Who knows? If I can find him, maybe we can put a stop to the whole pilgrimage. I should have killed him in the womb when I had the chance. Whatever he is, he's not higher. He might not be polluted with their culture yet, but it will come to him eventually. Apparently not. He found an alternative to a route you believed was set in stone. His destiny is inside the void, not with ANA. Paul shrugged. Whichever one it is, it's not a human destiny. Our destiny is what we decide to make it. Free choice, remember? You're wrong, son. I see you believe in yourself, and I wish you well in that. But you're wrong. Okay, we'll just differ on that one. What happened to Eric? Body loss. Paul caught Aaron's expression. Not us. It was a genuine accident. He was working hard to support both girls. A decent lad, I guess. The farmer he was helping out didn't do very good maintenance. The Agrobot chewed him up something bad. This was maybe 6 months after the kids were born. His insurance was all paid up, but he'd only just had his memory cell fitted. It's always the same in cases like that. The near body has only a few months of memories, which is never enough to install a decent level of personality. In his real-life state, he was very childlike, ironically, because his entire childhood was what he lacked. There was no real emotional connection with the sisters and his two children. Not immediately. Imelda worked hard at correcting that. She did well. They went off together. Sabine and little Inigo got left behind. It kicked off a huge family argument. The sisters never really spoke after that, which is why Aunt Imelda got written out of his official history. That's pretty much it. Yes.
I've never met a more despicable human, Corilin said as the regrav capsule lifted from the ranch, and I include our dear cleric conservator in that statement.
Did you ever meet a higher angel?
No.
Well then.
That's it? She shouted angrily. That's your justification.
I'm not trying to justify anything. All I'm doing is pointing out that for every action there is an equal and opposite reaction. What he used to do was part of the era.
He's a psychopath. Fuck knows how many babies he's killed. He belongs in suspension for the rest of eternity.
Dead, you mean?
Whatever,
she snapped, and slumped down into the cushioning, her delicate features set in a furious sulk. I told you to leave the talking to me.
Shut the fuck up.
Well, at least he helped us.
How?
There now. You see, if you hadn't gone stomping off in a huff.
Screw you. I bet you were protectorate before the memory wipe. It certainly fits.
No.
You can't be certain, though. And how come you have such highly placed contacts in their filthy organization?
I simply know who to ask in such circumstances, that's all. Information does not imply compliance, and I don't know where my data originate from.
Pah!
She turned to watch the desert skim past. Aaron waited a minute for her to relent. When she didn't, he smiled quietly and said, Inigo bought a rejuvenation policy.
So?
She managed to spit it out with more petulance than a tantruming 5-year-old. It was part of his attempt to fit in with a normal existence, Aaron continued passively. No one with bionics needs a rejuvenation treatment. That's strictly for advancers and normals. Bionics maintain human cells at an optimum state. The body doesn't age biologically after you hit 25. He did it to fool the Protectorate. After all, he knew what his heritage was, which means he knew what they would do to him if he made a slip. And that helps us how? It means he had a secure memory store. It probably dates right up to his assignment to Centurion Station.
I'm so sorry. I didn't realize you were deaf. And that helps us how?
Somewhere on Anagaska, there's an electronic version of the young Inigo's personality. Alkoff gave me the name of the company he bought the policy from.
That's not going to... Oh, dear Ozzy. You have got to be kidding.
Aaron grinned cheerfully at her. About time this planet saw a little excitement. Prior to the Starflyer War, when the Commonwealth was essentially one society comprising predominantly physical citizens, the government created a very senior committee named the Exoprotectorate Council, whose brief was to evaluate the threat level presented by each new alien species as it was discovered. After ANA came online and took over design, manufacture, and operation of the Commonwealth Navy's warships, threat became something of a non-term. If the old Commonwealth could defeat the Primes, ANA, with its nearly post-physical technology, was unlikely to be menaced by anything less than a malevolent post-physical. That was not to say that the remaining physical sector of the Commonwealth could not encounter a whole load of grief out among the stars, and so the Exoprotectorate Council lived on in a modified form inside ANA, operating independently of ANA governance. Its meetings were few and infrequent. Therefore, when Admiral Casimir Benelli called for one, every delegate appeared, suspecting the reason. They met in a neutral perceptual reality in a secure location within ANA, an old-fashioned conference room with rather extravagant white and orange furniture, and a panoramic window showing them the Malavian plains with their wall of hydrogen volcanoes. Sheets of ice pebble meteorites sleeted downward, burning crimson contrails,
with lightning forks rippling in their wake. Casimir activated the perceptual reality and materialized in the seat at the head of the table. Gore flicked in a millisecond later, sitting directly to Casimir's right. He was followed by Justine. Ilanthe was next to appear, a delicate-looking woman dressed in a blue and grey leotard. Her dark hair had been cropped short and coloured with purple streaks. They did not represent enrichments. They were just highlights, a star Casimir thought he recognized, but could not quite place without running a check through his enhanced neural structure. Ilanthe was not worth the effort. She was the Accelerator faction's appointment to the Council, and enjoyed making mischief where she could. The trick with her was not to rise to the bait. Crispin Goldreich arrived in the seat next to Justine. Over 1,000 years ago, he had been a senator sitting on the original Exo-Protectorate Council. It was an appointment he had maintained ever since. Casimir and ANA governance allowed him to remain, because when it came to advising on the political angle of a crisis, there were few better short of a full governance convocation. Unfortunately, his usefulness was limited by a somewhat xenophobic view of aliens. Several members of his family had been lost on Natavara during the Starflyer War, and that had shaped his opinion ever since. As such, he was a strong advocate of both the isolationist and internalist factions. The last two were Crewan and John Thelwell, who respectively put forward custodian and Darwinist faction positions. "Thank you for attending," Casimir said. "I have implemented this council because the situation with regard to the Orcusan Empire has entered a new stage. The Navy squadron deployed in the Hantcha domain has detected a massive Empire fleet now in flight. Its trajectory is aimed directly at the Commonwealth, specifically the sector containing Elezalin."
"How many ships?" Justine asked.
2,817, Casimir replied, "of which 900 are their Star Slayer class, the biggest, most expensive warships they've ever built. The Empire's economy has suffered a significant downturn over the last 40 years, in order to facilitate their production. They are armed with warheads similar to quantum busters. They think we don't know about them, but we detected the trials they conducted 45 years ago.
"They have quantum busters?" Crispin asked.
"A variant of them, yes," Casimir said. "Such a development was inevitable. They make our atom bomb era species look like a bunch of pacifists. And the Navy hasn't bothered to share this with us. The Empire believes their advantage is that we don't know. To make it public knowledge that the Empire possesses a device which the external worlds would regard as a doomsday weapon would be to give away our advantage, not to mention damaging public confidence."
"They must be insane," Crewan muttered. "The Emperor must realize how we'll react to an assault of that nature. They know how strong we are."
"Actually, they don't," Casimir said. "Nobody outside ANA governance and myself knows the exact capability of the deterrence fleet.
Please tell me it is strong enough to deal with the Orcusan Empire."
"Don't concern yourself on that score. They do not pose any sort of threat."
"Are they alone?" Gore asked. "The ambassador was quite adamant that they'd dug up some decent allies."
"There were no non-Empire ships in the fleet which launched," Casimir said.
"We'll make a politician out of you yet, my boy. So do we know for sure that the Star Slayer class is armed only with quantum busters, or have they found some nasty leftovers from someone who went post-physical?"
"We'd have to intercept a Star Slayer and scan it to be certain of the precise contents," Casimir said. "I don't advise that. In Orcusan terms, that provocation would be a declaration of war. Plus, we'd tip our hand how powerful we are."
"What the hell do you advise?" Crispin asked.
"They're going to find out eventually."
"I'd like to avoid that. What I'd like to see applied to the Orcusans is something along the lines of intense diplomatic persuasion that they turn the fleet around and go home."
"Won't happen," Crewan said. "If the Empire has launched what is essentially its entire navy at us, it will be politically impossible for them to return until the pilgrimage has been halted. Asking them nicely just won't hack it. We'll have to use force."
"What about another more immediate threat to the Empire?"
Justine suggested. "Some unknown ships approaching from another direction."
"We could deliver that," surely?
Yes, Casimir said, but it simply postpones the inevitable. We can manufacture what appears to be a threat, but if their fleet returns to challenge an intruder, then our bluff will be called. I cannot blow up star systems simply to maintain an illusion. No matter the morality, there is a considerable physical problem with radiation. Our firewall project showed that.
How long until they get here?
Ilanthi asked. Their flight time to Elezalin is 79 days, Casimir said. A significant figure, because the pilgrimage fleet will not be completed by then. It is reasonable to assume their aim is to hit the pilgrimage ships while they're still on the ground. If the Living Dream were to get its ships into space, they would be a lot harder to intercept, especially for the Empire.
Then I don't understand your reluctance to create a diversion. Once the pilgrimage ships are in space, the Empire fleet is effectively neutralized. You don't have to do anything as dramatic as blow up a star on the other side of the Empire. Launch 1,000 drones with a phantom signature, so it appears a hostile fleet is heading to the Empire. Buy us some time for Living Dream.
They'd know, Gore said. It's the timing, again. They launch their fleet. We have to delay it.
And, oh, look, here's an unknown threat coming at them from the other side of space. How about that for coincidence?
Even the Arkansans aren't that stupid.
Don't count on it,
John Thelwell muttered. It would have to be a credible threat to divert them, Casimir said.
So skulk around the Empire's borders and wreck a couple of stars, or at least planets.
We employ the word Empire too glibly, Justine said. The most literal translation of their planets is worlds upon which we nest. I'm ashamed the committee is prepared to demonize the Arkansans to justify force. We must concentrate on peaceful solutions.
Ananthi gave Gore a small victory smile as he glowered at his daughter.
If they weren't sending a fleet toward us, armed with enough quantum busters to wipe out every Commonwealth planet, I might not refer to them as a bunch of psychopathic fuckheads, Gore snapped. As it is, we are here to advise the Navy on how to respond. You met the ambassador. Exactly what sort of peaceful overture do you think the Empire will respond to?
We have to provide them with options, Justine said, preferably ones which allow them to save face.
Like pressuring Living Dream not to launch its ridiculous pilgrimage, Crewan said.
Outside this committee's mandate, Ilanthi said swiftly, we advise the Navy on its response.
She did not even turn to look at Crewan.
You want to push for something like that? Bring it up at a political meeting or even governance.
It is a valid option, Justine said. Not here, it isn't. Here we decide on how many of their sons we turn Nova in order to convince them to turn back.
Nobody is turning Empire sons Nova, Casimir said.
As I said, their fleet does not pose a physical threat to any aspect of the Commonwealth. It can be effectively neutralized.
That's quite a big claim, Ilanthi said. You sure about that?
Providing they do not possess an excess of stolen post-physical technology, yes.
Then do just that. Neutralize them. Stop them cold in interstellar space. It's not like they have a backup fleet to send if anything goes wrong.
Casimir glanced around the table. Is that the recommendation of this committee?
It certainly is not, Justine said.
And your plan is?
Ilanthi inquired archly.
A warning, John Thelwell said. In all likelihood, several warnings, considering who we're dealing with, followed by a demonstration of our capability and intent.
Would that be several demonstrations?
Justine asked acidly,
just to get the point over how big and scary we are.
Once they see they cannot stop the pilgrimage, they will turn back.
That implies a governing factor of logic and reason,
Crispin said. This is the Arkansans we're talking about. They've committed to stopping us. Even if it meant the death of every starship in their fleet, they'd keep coming.
The warships will be disabled, not destroyed, Casimir said. I could not countenance such a loss of life.
Then I don't even see what you convened us for,
Crispin said.
Because governance and I don't want to reveal our true capability outside a genuine and serious threat, which this is not.
Rock in a hard place, Gore grunted. The only way to deal with them without huge loss of life all around is by using ANA's technology, which in turn makes us frightening to all the physical aliens knocking around this section of the galaxy.
This is a moral debate, Ilanthi mocked.
It might get even the Rael worried about us, Justine said.
Gets my vote, Gore said. Supercilious little turds. It's about time someone gave their pedestal a good kicking.
Oh, stop it, Justine told him.
Gore leaned forward. Deliver a warning to the command ship, he said. If it is ignored, disable that ship. If they continue after that, take the lot of them down. Use the lowest level of technology we've got that will do the job, but do it.
Second it, Crispin said.
I would point out that it will be a nestling of the Emperor in charge of the fleet, Crewan said. The political implications of the ruling nest being defeated are not good. The likelihood of subsequent instability is strong.
Which neither harms nor concerns us, John Thelwell said. He gave the custodian a dismissive glance.
We've given the Empire a beating before. They never learn.
Our position gives us an obligation, Justine said.
Only according to human models, Ilanthi said. These are aliens.
I wish to remain true to myself. Thank you, Justine said primly.
Of course you do.
I vote against any physical force being used against the Empire fleet, no matter how restrained. We need to seek an alternative.
Thank you, Mother, Casimir said. Anyone else against the motion?
Crewan raised his hand. Casimir looked around the table. Then it is the majority vote that the Navy deliver a warning to the command ship and subsequently disable it if that warning is ignored. I will initiate that immediately.
And what if they keep coming after the command ship is taken out?
Justine asked.
Which they will, and you all know it.
Then I will reconvene this committee, Casimir said.
She let out an exasperated hiss of breath, and against all etiquette, withdrew instantly. The others stared at the vacated space as the perceptual reality adjusted to her absence.
That's what being in a real body does for you, Ilanthi muttered archly.
I will, of course, provide a secure link to the Navy ship delivering the ultimatum, Casimir said. All of you will be able to access the event.
How long until the demand is made? John Thelwell asked.
I'd like to bring in a ship which I know has the ability to disable a Star Slayer without loss of life, Casimir said. We have that capability in the Hancher Assistance Squadron. Flight time will be within 10 days. The warning will allow them 1 Earth day to turn around.
We'll be back here in 2 weeks then, Gore predicted.
Less than a second after the meeting officially ended, Ilanthi requested access to Gore's personal perceptual reality. He had been expecting it, and permitted her entry as he ambled along the white sand beach below the headland. She walked up out of the water, wearing a blue and white bikini.
Very Ursula Andress, he said appreciatively. Gone was the spiky cat hairstyle of the meeting. She was shaking droplets out of long honey-colored tresses.
Thank you.
Ilanthi squinted up at the noon sun, holding a pale hand across her forehead.
The governors you have configuring this place are very crude. Am I likely to get sunburned?
They're not crude, just strong. Prevents hostiles trojaning in nasty surprises. And no, you won't get sunburned. Just increase your skin pigmentation factor.
Ah.
She blinked as her skin darkened to a rich bronze.
It's still a very earthy environment to me.
Will you get me drunk and seduce me?
Sex is common enough between enemies.
Oh, Gore, she said, pouting.
We're not enemies. Besides, we both got what we wanted out of the meeting.
Did we?
We both voted for the same thing.
Why is dear Justine still sulking?
He started walking along the shoreline again.
One word of genuine advice. Don't ever underestimate my daughter.
I still do occasionally. It's a mistake.
Point taken.
Do you think Casimir will delay because of her?
Fuck no. He's the most right-stuff human you'll ever meet. Government gave him a clear order, so he clicks his boot heels, salutes and presses the button.
You are so anachronistic. You really should update your references.
What? Haul myself all the way into the 25th century?
Well, one step at a time,
That's when you were born, wasn't it? She chuckled.
They're right. You are pure evil.
Who's they?
Just about everybody.
They're probably right, then. So what can I do for you?
Can we deal?
On the pilgrimage? Sure.
Interesting capitulation. Why do I not believe you?
It's going to be a cusp event. Every faction knows it. Hell, even some of the animals outside are waking up to what's going on. The Dormanists are wetting themselves with excitement, and your group isn't much better while you run around pushing and prodding in places you shouldn't.
I don't know what you're talking about.
That ass, Marius, is clocking a lot of light years. She pretended shock, her hand going to the base of her throat.
As is your delivery man.
True conservatives are paranoid little creatures. They have good cause.
You claim you're not one of them.
I have an affiliation.
Funny.
According to our files, you're the chairman of the board. You really should update your references. She put her hands on her hips. Look, do you want to deal or not? You're very hot in that pose, you know that?
Gore!
All right. What are you offering? Some detente. A little less manipulation from both sides. Let the animals decide, you mean? I don't think I can buy that coming from you. In any case, we've both spent so long moving our pawns into place that they'll just keep on going without us now. He tilted his head to one side and smiled. Or am I missing something?
No.
Really? Perhaps some critical event that you need to work smoothly. Moments like that are made up by historians after the event to justify their own dreary existence. There's no one thing which will make or break the pilgrimage.
Really? Have you ever tried telling Ozzy or Nigel that the actions of an individual are historically invalid?
Nobody manipulated them. And this is a distraction. We simply want both sides to cool down.
So the Accelerator faction wants to let galactic events be decided by animals. No wonder you don't like my environment. It doesn't have any flying pigs.
Is that your answer?
No, but I am mildly curious. Unless either a faction or ANA governance itself intervenes, the pilgrimage ships will launch. So what the fuck, exactly, is the Accelerator line on the galaxy being devoured by the void, exterminating all life, including ourselves?
It won't happen. This is why I'm here. To tell you we have taken precautions in the event of the worst-case scenario.
Gore stopped and turned to stare at her, genuinely surprised. What the fuck are you talking about?
If the void's boundary sweeps through this sector of space, Earth and ANA will be perfectly safe.
You don't know that.
Oh, yes, we do.
I really, really hope you're not basing your goals on some chunk of weapons technology you've managed to cobble together with a couple of old replicators. The Rael cannot defeat the boundary. Even ANA governance can't work out what will happen if and when the void's boundary washes across itself.
That level of expansion is extremely unlikely, to the point of sheer impossibility. First, the stars of the wall have tremendous mass, enough to facilitate the wishes of every living dream pilgrim for centuries. It is an absolute fallacy that every star in the galaxy will be engulfed by the void. It's Rael propaganda, shouted in tedious repetition by the Orcasans. The Rael are an ancient failed race, as changeless as the void itself. They have no right to dictate to us. Even if the entire galactic core gets devoured, it doesn't matter. There's nothing alive in there. The planets are radiation-saturated husks of rock. You even believe it yourself, always accusing us of wanting the devourment. Have I ever said that?
No. I know exactly what accelerators want. Fusion, right? You want to merge ANA with the fabric of the void continuum. You think that's how we'll achieve post-physical status.
You have accessed Inigo's dreams. We know the conservatives have analyzed them as thoroughly as everyone else. Inside the void, the mind directly affects the fabric of the universe. We can take charge of our own destiny.
No, 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 Gore shouted. The void is not a fucking universe. It's a microverse.
a tiny and significant little speck of nothing. In cosmological terms, it doesn't even register. You can play God in there for sure. The water walker does it. But you're only God in there. Nowhere else. It is an alien version of ANA, that's all. That's not transcendence. It's being so far up your own ass that you can't say what's going on outside.
It is a huge opportunity for growth. The void has stalled. It has been changeless for millions, billions of years. We can reinvigorate it. Humans have already begun that process. Ordinary, pitiful animals that now have mental powers even we can only fantasize about. Imagine what will happen when ANA has full access to such a technology and begins to manipulate it in new directions.
Sweet Ozzy, you are pitiful. I'd be contemptuous if I considered you sentient. But you're not even that.
We knew you would be opposed to the fusion. This is what our offer concerns.
Go on, Gore said suspiciously.
We will duplicate ANA. Those who wish to attain fusion with the void can stay here. Those who do not can transfer over and fly free.
That doesn't solve a fucking thing, girlie. The void can't be allowed to fuse with a post-physical mind or even ANA, which, face it, isn't there yet.
Ilanthi's expression hardened. Your language betrays you. Can't be allowed. You don't have the right to make that judgment. Evolution will occur, triggered either by the pilgrimage or by a more direct connection. For all you know, the Water Walker himself may bring about expansion.
He happened 1,000 years ago. 10,000 for all we know.
Time is irrelevant in there.
Shit. You're not accelerators, not anymore. You've seen the light and converted to living dream.
We have seen an opportunity to advance ourselves and taken it. We have never hidden our purpose from anyone.
Accelerators didn't start out lusting after the void.
Now you are betraying your age, your own changeless nature.
I should just get out of the way then, should I? Maybe simply erase myself. Make it all nice and simple for the new order.
You are responsible for your own destiny. She shrugged an elegant shoulder. Your choice.
Okay. Granted. And I will make it, believe me. But assuming you're right and the void doesn't expand like a hyperspace tsunami when the pilgrimage gets inside, how are you going to fuse ANA with it?
We don't have to. Hyas will travel with the pilgrimage ships. They will study the true nature of the void fabric and the mechanism which generates it.
If it can be built once, Gore said quietly, it can be built again.
Ilanthi smiled. Now you understand. We can build a second void here in this solar system and bring about the fusion right away. ANA will evolve and transcend.
Nice science experiment. What happens if it doesn't work? ANA is the core of higher culture. Earth is the physical center of the Commonwealth. If you take that away, two cultures will suffer.
I never thought I'd hear that. Gore Bonelli, whining liberal, normal. Higher and advancer humans will have to make their own way in the universe. That, too, is evolution.
In a galaxy that your arrogance will have given a very short future.
Our solution is one that will satisfy all factions. Both of us can carry on almost as before.
You weren't even born on Earth. I was. It's my home, and I'm not letting anyone fuck with it.
Then you are even less developed than we gave you credit for. Our offer stands. I expect the other factions will take us up on it when they see the inevitability of what is to come.
Are you planning to blow the Empire fleet out of space? Ilanthi looked genuinely indignant.
Of course not. They are an irrelevance. Casimir will deal with them one way or another. She smiled coldly. Please consider our offer, Gore. It is made in the spirit of reconciliation. After all, if anyone can be said to be ANA's father, it is you. Time, perhaps, to let go and allow your child to make its own way in life.
She trotted back into the waves and dived below the water. Gore stared at the surf where she had disappeared, his mind tracing her withdrawal from his personal reality. Fuck me, he grunted.
When he walked along the dirt track that curved up around the headland, he found Nelson already sitting by the pool at the base of the tower. As usual, there was a tall drink on the table beside him.
"Did you get all that?" Gore asked as he sat down.
"I got it all. I just don't think I believe much of it. For a start, she's being very glib about the pilgrimage ships actually getting inside."
"What are you going to do?"
"I knew they wanted the kind of abilities the void fabric has. That's a logical development on the way to becoming post-physical. But I'm concerned about their method of acquisition. I don't believe a damn word about some bunch of selfless academics going with the pilgrimage to study how the thing is put together. We're going to have to root around a little harder to find out what they're really up to out there. Find out what you can about that guy Marius was visiting on Arevalo. That physicist, Troblum.
Will do. And what if ANA does finally become capable of ascending to post-physical status? I've always known it would, right from the start. That was the whole point of it. Well, that and giving ourselves the ability to defend the Commonwealth.
Are you going to try to stop it?
Of course not. I just don't want the natural process hijacked. And that's what's going to happen if we're not careful.
It was already night when Aaron's regrav capsule landed on the pad of St. Mary's Clinic, just outside the reception block. He stepped out and looked around. The clinic was set in 4 square miles of thick forest, with individual buildings scattered across the landscape. Tall gistrel trees formed a dark wall around the pad, their long feathery branches blocking any view of the villas, medical blocks, spas, and leisure domes he knew were out there. The only light came from the long windows of the reception block 30 meters away, shining through the black trunks. Corilyn stood beside him, straightening her blouse. Her face was screwed up.
"Gosh, I love the whole gloomy jungle with wild creatures look they've gone for. Very welcoming.
Perhaps we could get your manic depression eradicated while we're here."
"Screw you.
Now remember, darling, happy faces."
He gripped her hand and produced a big bright smile. She almost shook free, then remembered and drew a reluctant breath.
"Okay, but this better be quick."
The reception doors opened as they walked toward the low building. It was a plush interior that looked as if it had been carved out of pink and gold marble, with secluded grotto chambers recessed into the wall of the central hall. Most of the chambers had been utilized by exclusive retail outlets as display booths for their inordinately expensive designer clothes and products. Their personal clinician was waiting to greet them, Ruth Stahl, who clearly had been designed to promote the clinic's expertise, with a body that resembled a teenage goddess draped in semi-translucent silver and pink fabric. Even Aaron, who was perfectly mission-focused, took a moment to admire and smile at the vision of vitality who extended her flawless hand in greeting. His field functions detected a discreet scan from the building's security net, which he deflected easily enough, showing the sensors an image of a moderately overweight man. The additional volume around his torso was actually provided by a bandolier harness carrying an array of weapons. Ruth Stahl was devoid of all enrichments, though she had more macrocellular clusters than the average advancer. Her nervous system shone with impulses operating at the kind of rates that normal humans could achieve only with a serious dose of accelerants.
"Thank you so much for choosing our clinic, Mr. Telfer," she said,
her hand pressed against Aaron's palm, squeezing flirtatiously. His bionics ran a check for pheromone infiltration. Paranoid, but her touch and voice were definitely arousing him. His exovision grid showed his heart rate up, his skin temperature rising. "No infiltration," his U-shadow reported. "So it was all natural then. Hardly surprising."
"You're welcome,"
Corilyn said in a voice so cold that it should have produced ice droplets.
Yeah,
Aaron mumbled belatedly. He reluctantly withdrew his hand, enjoying the coy amusement in the clinician's limpid green eyes.
"Thanks for seeing us at such short notice. We're always happy to help couples achieve a more secure relationship,"
Ruth Stahl said.
"I believe you said you wanted twins."
"Twins?"
Corilin repeated blankly.
That's right. Aaron put an arm around Corilin's shoulders, feeling the muscles locked rigid. The best we can have.
Of course, Ruth Stahl said.
Boys or girls?
Darling? Aaron inquired.
Boys,
Corilin said.
Do you have any idea of their physiological status?
At least as good as you, Aaron told her, which produced another smile. And I'd like the pair of us to be advanced to that level, too. It's about time I went, cutting edge. He patted his bulky stomach ruefully. Perhaps a little metabolism tweaking to thin me down?
I'd be very grateful for that, Corilin said. He's so repugnant to look at right now. Never mind sex.
Oh, darling, you promised not to mention that, Aaron said tightly. She smiled brightly.
It's a wonderful step to acknowledge any problems right at the start, Ruth Stahl said. You'll be an enviable family. We can begin our appraisal tomorrow and review what we can offer you. Our premium service will fast-track your changes. I don't expect this to take more than a couple of weeks. Were you intending to carry the twins yourself? She asked Corilin. Or is it going to be a womb tank?
Haven't decided. Corilin smiled back. I love him enough to consider the physical burden, but you'll have to show me what you can do to make pregnancy easier before I commit.
How sweet. I'll have a simulated sensory package of the full pregnancy option ready for you to review in the morning. And remember, we can always reverse the changes afterward.
Lovely.
We're giving you Villa 163, which has its own pool, and it's not far from Block 3 where you'll receive your treatments.
Excellent, Aaron said. I think I'll go check out the main pool and restaurants first, especially that Singapore grill I've heard about. What about you, dear?
It's been a long day. I'll go to the villa and organize that.
Corilin eyed the various displays around the hall.
After some shopping. I really like some of these designs.
Don't spend too much. He gave her a farewell peck on the cheek and headed out the door. His U-shadow extracted the clinic map from the local net, which would give the appearance of normality for another few minutes.
Can you get into the vault? He asked it.
No, there are no data channels into the vault.
Aaron took a path away from the landing pad that would lead to the main pool building, a large blue-tinted dome that housed a lush tropical environment, with the pool itself fashioned to resemble a lagoon. The path lit up like a strip of glowing yellow fog under his feet.
What about the security system? He asked his U-shadow. I can only access the lower levels. All guests are under permanent surveillance of some kind. Several are red-tagged.
Really? Are we red-tagged?
No.
Will they know if I leave the path?
Yes. Various passive sensors are feeding the smart core.
Start some diversions, please. Trigger alerts and attack the security net in several places, well away from me. Nothing to warrant a police call-out.
Initiating.
Aaron left the path and started to run through the trees. His suit spun a stealth effect around him. After a minute of slipping unseen through the forest, he arrived at the administration block. There were two stories above ground, and his research had shown 10 floors cut into the bedrock beneath the forest. The secure storage vault was on the bottom. His field function scan revealed a complex array of sensors guarding the walls and the surrounding swath of garden. He began to sprint past the last trees, accelerating hard with field-reinforced muscles until he was at the edge of the lawn. Then he jumped, extending his force field wide, shaping it into two long, swept-back petals. Suspended between his invisible wings, he glided directly at a specific window on the upper floor like a silent missile. He grinned into the air that rushed against his face and rippled his suit. Excitement was starting to build, and his bionics could suppress it only so much. Even though he knew what he was going to have to do, he was still enjoying himself. This was what he existed for. Aaron let out an M-pulse from his bionics, targeted to disable the sensors and power supply around the window. When he was 5 meters from the wall, he triggered a disruptor effect. Glass turned to white powder and blew inward with the sound of damp cloth being ripped. He cancelled his force field wings and dropped through the hole,
hitting the floor with a roll. Inside was a long finance department office, deserted and dark. The door was locked. He did not use the disruptor effect, but simply smashed it down with amplified muscle power. The corridor outside ran the length of the building. Orange emergency lighting produced strangely angled shadows across the walls. His scrambler effect knocked out the net across half of the building. He jogged to the emergency stairwell and burst through, vaulted over the rail, and landed with a loud thud on the concrete floor below, his integral force field absorbing the impact. He scanned the area. Two security managers were sitting in the control center, both heavily enriched. They were motionless as their U-shadows interfaced them with the clinic's security net, and they struggled to make sense of what was happening across the forest. The door broke apart as Aaron walked through it. 8 energy dumps flew out from the bandolier straps under his suit, hand-sized black disks that zipped through the air like cybernetic hornets. They struck the security managers before either could fire a shot. Both of them were transformed into silhouettes of searing white light as their personal force fields were overloaded relentlessly. Tendrils of electricity lashed out from the incandescent shapes, grounding through the desks and chairs next to them. Ribbons of smoke crept up from the carpet around their feet. They began to thrash about as the discharge of energy soared to an unbearable thunderclap screech. Light panels in the ceiling detonated into splinters of bubbling plastic. Aaron drew a jelly gun from the bandolier harness as the nimbus of light on the first manager began to fade. The man's force field flickered erratically into a purple and orange shroud. Dark shadows infiltrated the dying luminescence, exposing swaths of smoldering uniform. Aaron fired. The manager disintegrated into a spherical wave of gore that spattered across the room. After that, Aaron simply waited a few seconds until the energy dumps completed their work on the second manager and her force field sputtered out. The room was plunged into darkness as she fell to the floor in a sobbing heap, barely conscious. He knelt beside her and took the surgical cutter from his pocket. The little black and silver gadget extended its 8 malmetal arms as he placed it carefully on her head. Unlike Ruth Stahl, the clinic had not designed any beauty into the security manager. She had a plain round face with dark, enriched eyes. The skin on her cheeks was red and raw from the crackling electron currents. Tears were leaking across them as she gazed up at Aaron.
"Please,"
she croaked. "Don't worry," he told her. "You won't remember this night when you're relifed." The cutter settled on the crown of her head, like some vampiric creature, the arms tightening to obtain a better grip on her singed flesh. Microsurgery energy blades slid out and began to cut. Aaron waited with only the sound of gooey blood droplets drizzling down from the soot-caked ceiling to break the dark silence of the room. "Procedure complete," his U-shadow reported. Aaron reached down and gently pulled the surgical cutter. It lifted upwards with a slimy sucking sound, taking the top of her skull with it. A small amount of blood welled up around the edges of the severed bone, dribbling down through the matted hair. Her exposed brain glistened a pale grey in the weak emergency lighting, shining in from the corridor outside. He poised his left hand a couple of centimetres above the gory naked flesh. The skin on his palm puckered in 7 little circles. Slender worm-like tendrils began to wriggle out of each apex. He brought the hand down on her brain and manipulated his force field to bond the two together, preventing his hand from sliding even fractionally. The tendrils insinuated themselves into her neuron structure, branching again and again like some plant root seeking moisture. Those tips were hunting out distinct neural pathways, circumventing conscious control over not just her body, but her thoughts. Synapses were violated and corrupted successfully. His metallic software began to pull coherent strands out of the chaotic impulses. Her name was Wirtz Aku, 117 years old, advancer heritage, currently married to Asher Lel, 2 children. The youngest, Harry, was 2 years old. She was upset that she had pulled another late shift. Little Harry did so like her reading to him before bedtime. Aaron software moved the acquisition focus up toward the present. All earlier emotional content was superseded by sheer terror. Body sensory input was minimal,
sinking below waves of pain from the force field to collapse. One memory rose above all the others, bright and loud. The surgical cutter descending, starting to repeat, thoughts becoming incoherent as the memory degenerated into a psychosis loop. Limbs shaking as body shock commenced. Forget that, Aaron's thoughts instruct the brain he now rules. He has to concentrate, to exert his own thoughts to squash the terror memory. His influence is assisted by the flawless positioning of the neuron override tendrils, making it impossible for her to resist. A different kind of mental pressure then is exerted. Her conscious thoughts wither to insensate status, effectively sinking her into a coma. Stand, he commands the puppet body. It straightens up, and Aaron rises beside it. His hand remains locked in place on top of her ruined head by mucilage force field. Clinic security system review. Schematics flip up into their mutual exovision, showing alert points. His U-Shadow ends its roguish electronic assaults as he accesses the clinic net through Wirtz's private secure link. False signals are generated within the administration building to replace the equipment he neutralized during his entry. Codes, up from Wirtz's own memory, and her macrocellular clusters spill file after file of codes for every aspect of the clinic. He deploys them to damp down the security net, reducing it to a level zero state. Another set of commands resets the smart core's alertness, convincing it that it was receiving malfunction warnings and that the security managers now have everything under control. Several operatives across the forest are calling in. It's all right, he mouths, and Wirt sends on a secure link. There's been a spate of glitches. Those boogle-damned glints have been getting into the cabling again. They were chewing on a node, little bastards. Boogle-damned is a word Wirtz is fond of. Glints are tiny native rodents infesting the forest and always causing problems to the clinic and its machinery, despite two illegal attempts by the management to exterminate them. Generally, the explanation is accepted. Wirtz exchanges a few more in-character comments with colleagues and signs off. Vault. They walk along the ground floor corridor side by side, Aaron's hand still firmly in place on her head. Wirtz's code opens the elevator doors. Aaron extracts additional overrides that will clear him to accompany her down to the bottom. The vault level poses more of a problem. It is covered in sensors, all of which are linked directly to the clinic smart core through isolated protected circuits. There are no overrides he can utilize to smooth his passage. If it sees him, it will query his identity immediately. The mission is now time-critical. As the elevator reaches the vault level, Aaron uses an impulse to kill all power circuits and unguarded systems. His scrambler field disables the protected security network. The smart core now knows something is wrong but cannot detect what. The entire floor is an electronic dead zone.
This is the end of the CD. The program continues on the next CD.